Accession number 19659, Reel 1.
Colonel Schroeder, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Poland. In 7th of June 1922.
Which place in Poland?
Kowel, is Volhynia district.
Can you tell me something about your family background, please?
Yes, my father was legionnaire with Piłsudski during the First World War. And then, after the mobilization, being a musician, he got a job temporary with the army, warrant officers, responsible for conducting band, military band. And we settled in the Kowel, lived in a barracks, part of barracks of 50th Infantry Division.
50th. Where did you go to school?
I went to preparatory school in the regimental area. Then I went to the first one before gymnasium. That means equivalent to secondary education. And of course, I was in a fourth class, so-called in Poland then, when the war broke out. So I had only lower matriculation. I was waiting for the next 2 years to become the fully fledged matriculated student to go to university. But unfortunately, when war broke out, I had to pick up a rifle and go.
Before the 1st of September 1939, had you had any military training?
Yes, being senior scout, we had preparatory sort of training by the 50th Infantry Division, like here in England, some cadets corps in the secondary education schools.
Did scouts have military training?
Before the war, we started in 1938. Of the training, when we expected problem.
So there would be training in the scouts itself?
That's right. In the scouts, sort of accent was laid more on reconnaissance, spying, carrying orders or news about the enemy.
What happened to you on the 1st of September? What are your memories of that day?
About fortnight before the war, I was mobilized by scouting movement because they wanted to have me there. I was 17 years old then, and we had sort of trial shooting using machine guns and trying to defend ourselves from the air. After that, I came back and joined the 50th Infantry Division Reserve.
How did you go about doing that?
Being my father's son, if I may use the expression, warrant officer's son, professional. We all sons of professional soldiers were grouped together because, honestly, be quite honest, we grew up by the army or with the army, and we knew this, even if we didn't want to learn, we had to as kids. So naturally we were sort of given the responsible job guarding here and there, propping up reservists as such.
Where did you join?
Regiment, Kowel, in the barracks.
Can you tell me something about the Kowel area? What kind of people were living there?
Kowel area was predominant Ukrainian population. and Polish who discovered that they had sort of papers and documents that their ancestors were Poles, but of course turned to become the old Russian Orthodox Church and became naturally, gradually Ukrainians.
What was their behavior like at the start of the war?
At the start of the war, they were very loyal, always sided with us in case of trouble, even in prison. We had the same sort of language and behavior. There were some nationalist Ukrainians, you know, but they kept themselves separately from us. And but when the German occupation came along in due course, they started to be sort of Ukrainian Nazi troops.
Now, coming back to your own story, after you joined the army, what happened to you then?
Well, we were about 9th of September. I was put in charge of anti-aircraft machine gun with the three of our colleagues, sons of army military men as well. So we served the sort of defense purposes as far as the German Air Force was concerned.
You were in an anti-aircraft role?
That's right, then.
Can you tell me about firing at the German aircraft?
We did, but there was also the army anti-tank artillery, anti-aircraft artillery. So, of course, we claimed our own sort of shot down airplanes, and they claimed as well. So, whom it was, we don't know. Even today, doubts.
But you saw enemy aircraft coming down?
That's right, one, definitely. About 200 yards from us.
Was it a bomber or a fighter?
Fighter, it was fighter, definitely. It was not heavy.
What other memories have you got of the fighting at this time?
When we heard that a Polish army is retreating in this way during September, we were transferred to sort of like territorial army equivalent called National Guards. So they were all sort of kind of people. There were students, there were even the girls were taken as sisters, you know, Red Cross and so on and so on. And we received orders to march towards Vladimir, town Bojimir, to take up position at Ustivuk Bridge. Ustivuk. Then, of course, I met my father, to whom I presented a bottle of vodka, and he presented me with a bottle of milk. So he retreated, and we stopped there. We stopped Germans over the bridge, and then, of course, started to infiltrate all the news that the Russians are coming, Red Forces, and then Ukrainians started to wake up.
Can you describe the fighting with the Germans at this bridge?
I was, I'm using just sort of not very professional description, sharing machine guns the one who was shooting really, and the rest were just serving me ammunition and passing the belt with ammunition and so on and so on. And there was not only me, there were about a dozen scattered around the terrain. So there was crossfire, and Germans tried several times to cross it. And there was a lot of killing, wounding. Anyway, a lot of them fell down.
Was this German foot soldiers?
Foot soldiers, infantry, definitely. I haven't seen any tanks. And then all of a sudden they stopped doing it, they stopped shooting, and we were told to retreat. We have retreated to towards Vladimir, officer school, artillery reserve officer school was situated, and the boys from that school, not having any horses, wheeled their 75 guns, field guns, manually. And we went on the wings of those guns, and we sort of tried to recapture Vladimir town, because there was a lot of communists and guards already, you know, with red bands over the arms, not pretending. There was some robbing as well, and killing Poles and everybody who didn't want to join them. Anyway, we cleaned the town and we retreated towards woods, forests.
How long did it take to clean the town?
Day.
Was it house-to-house fighting?
No, I'm afraid not. It was just street fighting and garden, sort of, from garden to garden, we're jumping and going through. We wanted to get by all means towards the forest, the woods, so we can take cover there and get some rest.
Were there many of these people with red armbands?
A few hundred.
Were they Ukrainians or what?
Mostly Jews, and there were Ukrainians supporting them. There were Communist Party members, which was clandestine then. Of course, we didn't know. So I suspect only that, you know, that we didn't know, because there was not really any command. We were just left for ourselves. So we are taking care of our job and of ourselves. And being hungry, we had to get some food as well.
What were these communists armed with?
Polish rifles, hand grenades, and machine gun shells.
Did you suffer any casualties yourself?
As a troop, about company, we did. But we are told, well, that's bad luck if somebody goes down, wounded or killed. We are not carrying any wounded because that's a burden. And that's what we did.
Did these communists put up much resistance?
No. They went quite berserk with fright.
Had the Russian intervention already occurred by then?
No, not yet, but Polish cavalry, about squadron of Polish cavalry, about 100 men were just passing through, and they saw us, and he said, he warned us about the red troops, Soviet troops approaching. He said, for God's sake, don't trust them. They are so nice at the beginning, and then they surround you, and they will try to capture you. So, of course, we listened to it. We didn't have any talk with anybody. We just went into the depth of the woods.
Did it take you by surprise that the Russians should have intervened?
Absolutely. We thought it was betrayal, because whoever sided with the Germans was enemy as well. It's only natural. And then we heard, of course, but then I was in the woods and dressed in civilian outfit, that they were just becoming very cozy, you know, over the bridge in Brest and the other points of meeting with the German army. They were just friends, hugging each other, you know, and so on, so on. The first time in my life I really cried as a grown up, almost man, let's put it that way. Bitterness.
So what did you and your comrades do next?
We just marched, and we found the lieutenant of regular army among ourselves. He said, I'm lieutenant, so and so on. So he said, I will command you if you want me to, because we're all sort of gathered from all sorts of likes, dislikes, and every wake of the of the Polish nation, you know, something like that, the old men and the boys like us. Anyway, he mustered us together. We knew already battle training and fighting training. So, of course, we went in further on into the depth of the woods. And then we discovered there was a group, cavalry group, about 300 men strong, Uhlans, cavalry men, who part of them, they were mounted on the horses, and part of them, they were just like infantry, sitting, you know, on the peasants' carts. And if there was a trouble, they were just sort of dismounted cavalrymen and those men on the peasants' carts, and they were like sort of horse or motorized or infantry makeshift in a sort of support. We didn't have any heavy guns with us because that was useless in the woods. We didn't have any lances, you know, the cavalry has lances, we discarded, and we were armed for practical reasons with the rifles only and hand grenades. Even the swords were thrown out because there was no NBG. Not bloody good. So we just went like that. So gradually I became horseman as well. Oh, it was quite a price, you know. If officer came now, you get on that horse. We need some more horsemen. So when came November, beginning of December, by the way, we were commanded by captain, horse captain. That was not his name, and he asked us to call him Captain Orwoski. So we knew who it was. I really don't know. Anyway, he got mercy on us young chaps, boys, and he said, "Now look, you would do better if you go back to your own homes and join underground army." ZVZ. That the first time I heard that sort of phrase, ZVZ, Związek Walki Zbrojnej. It means sort of getting together all the loose fighting underground army troops or work under one command, so we knew what we were doing. It wasn't bad, you know. And of course, because I knew something about radio, sending signals and receiving them, very slowly, of course, not professionally, I was put not in charge, but as one, sort of to support the serving of that radio station. You know, there was a field one, we had to sort of push like a handle to get the electricity. And then I was sort of like taken out of this combination of troops, and was assigned to special sort of messenger service. So we went around the Poland, on this part of Poland, carrying special reports, you know, army reports, service reports, and parts of the, let's say, radio station or some guns or something, which our troops in the woods were short of.
Which areas of Poland were you operating in as a resistance worker?
It was Volhynia district plus north of Volhynia, which was the on the right hand side, Baranowice and Pinsk that way, and the left hand side from west side, it was the Grodno and Bialystok, and that the area we were sort of operating regular troops, if you can call them regular, and of course our supporting services in the terrain, which were just sort of like a sunk between the people, among the people. We couldn't have been, you know, distinguished that we are soldiers or something. We simply pretended, you know, we're just going about the business, how to get food, how to go without ticket, you know, and because very often you had to go without ticket naturally. And that way we were keeping in touch with the Lvov. There was some command in Lvov. But I was too lower rank to know more about it. I'm sorry.
What was it like to operate a resistance in this area?
It was, I think, at the beginning we were frightened of Russians, but then we discovered that they are really simple, let's put it frankly, stupid. So we try not to be boastful and sure of ourselves, but we try to use that weakness against them.
In what way were they so foolish?
They were just asking straight questions. Have you seen anything, you know, which is dicey, somebody who might be spy or something? So we're just showing anybody. And they said, oh, come of it, he's a Russian. Or he's a member of all parties. Oh, sorry, no, well, I didn't know. But he acted suspiciously. And they took it.
What kind of measures were the Russians taking in this area? Were they changing things?
At the beginning, they were sort of trying to be friendly, to capture people's sympathy. Of course, it was, if I use the expression, crafty way of getting deeper in among ourselves. Of course, we discovered that. So we did our best to pretend we're hunting for a food, and they couldn't do anything about it. The worst, I think, points to be careful, really, there were stations, railway stations. Because when we got out, you know, everybody was looked at. You know, and so from having we were stopped. So if I was carrying radio station lamps, I had once too, I was carrying them from Grodno, north of Poland, to Lvov, south. And they were just going, you know, sort of whisking me, you know, here and there. And I quickly turned around and showed my back, you know, so they thought I was helpful. I was just covering those two lamps. And they said,
all right.
Valves, I mean, yes. Megaban, you're correct. So, of course, once I was arrested for some suspicion, or I don't know, they said, immediately when I came out with you. So they took my shoes off, put me in the cell, and put the guards outside. But the window had a very thick, bars, iron bars. So I thought, well, that's it, I won't be shot. Because they were starting firing their own. So I jumped and got hold of the bars. And to my surprise, they were arrested so much, they just gave in. So, of course, I waited a bit, bended sort of upwards, without shoes on and a heavy coat. I went, sneaked through outside, waited for a guard to disappear around the corner, and then I ran. So, of course, on my way, a woman just noticed I am just barefooted in the snow. And she said, what's that, mister? Escaping from Russia? I said, yes, follow me behind. And she went, she was the wife of a railwayman man. So, of course, I got some old shoes, you know, get rid of my dress, whatever I had, because the already description of me must have been sent, you know, around. and just went by train back to my town on a goods train, which was not searched, naturally. So that is the way I just got back, and of course got my shoes back and so on. So.
Why do you think they were so suspicious of you that they should arrest you?
I must have been too often traveling up and down. Somebody must have noticed. So that was that has given us idea not to do it, you know, on a regular basis with one man. They should be changed over and all the time. So it's better this way, safer.
Were the Russians trying to introduce communism or socialism in any way?
Yes. Yes, by force they were just telling, you know, right, that group, get together, and the man was speaking to us, you know, how good it is in the Soviet Russia and so on, forgetting that there were simple men in serving in the Russian army who were fed up with the communists. If you got them one aside and spoke to him, in a fluent Ukrainian or Russian, which I knew both languages perfect, I grew among them. So he said, all right, I can tell you. Don't believe the blood, I think, not even a word. And marched away.
Not even?
Not even one word, believe. So, of course, we knew immediately. You know? We suspected for a long time, but then we knew. So. We just suffered in silence. You have to stand and pretend you are interested. You know? And when we were disbanded, that group next to was called up. Precisely the same thing was happening.
So, after you had escaped and got back, what happened to you then?
Well, I got my boots, spare ones, in the which were in my home. Mother was complaining, said, one of these days, my son, you are so stupid, fighting for you, you know, taking risk of your life, and so on, and so on, you were shot. She was almost sure, but I was not shot. I got away with it. So I just reported to the different sort of cell of our organization, and they said, right, we've been waiting for you. Report there and there. Pick up this and that, because I was messenger. That you have to deliver, let's say, to Lutsk, or you have to deliver that to Rovno, or some other town, you know. And of course, code names were given and the greetings in special way. You had to do it, you know, or you were the. I've been told there is a girl will be waiting for you, so make passes at her with that word three times repeated. So, of course, she was pretending she does, and she was waiting for those words. Once you pass those words, she said, all right, follow me. And that's it. You got two people you wanted to get to, you know, and report or hand over the written reports. So, as easy as that, but not in the practice, believe me. It sounds very easy.
How much success do you think you were having against the occupiers?
At that time, before I was arrested, I would like to be boastful and say 100%, but 90% yes. There were fringes who get caught, because we always disarray ourselves with different names, even if we felt like being in a sort of in danger in any way, and that's it. Of course, there were sort of